Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I thought I had the headphones in, but apparently I don't. That's okay. Hopefully, there's not a lot of noise going on here.
Hello. Hi, Lynn. How are you? I have a unfortunate picture of myself up with a lightsaber. I had to get into Zoom one time through Facebook. It wouldn't work any other way, and that was a Facebook picture I had. I'm out
I love it. It's very
there
cute.
with my lightsaber.
I think that's great. This it's the secret side of Elaine.
Right.
She's great.
Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Jen,
And Sean.
I like that room Jane is in.
Yes. Shameless plug, I guess, for my side gig.
That's cool, though.
So, are you recording? You are, aren't you?
I
Okay.
am.
Okay, but I'm still going to share it. So, did you see my announcement for McKenna today?
No.
She got accepted to Lakeland's physical therapy assistant program. 24 students is all that are accepted, and she got one.
And so she wants to do it.
I think so. We're gonna see. Of course, we narrowed it down to two apartments in Charleston for Eastern, and then coming home, she's like, "Mom, look at this." And so now we're like, "Oh, what do
That's how it is, right? Like as soon as you're ready.
So I'm pretty excited for her because that would be kind of sweet, 2 years and your physical therapy assistant making more money than her dad and I, and then go to school to become a doctor.
That's great.
But now you,
Congratulations.
yeah, I'm happy for.
I'm glad she's not just doing it for you. She's doing it for her.
Isn't that funny?
It's so great. I'm trying to make sure I get everybody who, as they come into the waiting room, I sort of lose track. I don't know if people sit there for too long.
Do you ever have any Zoom bombers?
No, we've been so lucky.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And in writing things, they get them. And people who they have to not let in. And
Wow. No,
so
we've had no problems like that. The biggest problem is that at the beginning of the meeting, if I'm not really paying attention, people don't get let in. They just sit there in the waiting room forever. So it's hard to do anything else during that couple minutes.
Right, yeah.
So this morning, at the very beginning of the DD board meeting, I got a text and then I got a phone call from public health. So I was like, oh. Letting people in and talking on the phone. Oh.
Adjust my chair.
Elaine, thank you for the article. I got it. I
Oh.
just haven't seen you. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I just absolutely freaked out a custodial person because she had left her keys in the door of your all's, that hall. So I walked right in and then she discovered me looking for your office and got really upset. I didn't know you all weren't there, but anyway, I'm glad you got the article.
Yes, thank you.
Lynn, I was so glad to get your announcement today. And is that Leanne I see up on the gallery?
Hello.
Hey, nice to meet you, Leanne.
Likewise, thank you.
Yeah, glad that you could be at the board meeting today.
Oh, I wouldn't miss it. So
Very
you wouldn't miss it for
wonderful.
the next
Wonderful. Well, it's a lively group most of the time.
years,
Hi, Julian.
have a quorum yet.
Yeah, we do.
3, 4, 5. Looks like it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's go call to order. Stephanie, could you take a roll, please?
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Elaine Plencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson. Julian Rappaport.
The mic's off.
Julian.
Here.
Thank you. Jane Sprandl.
Here.
John Paul Joachim. Joe Oma Asagie.
Here. Okay. So, instructions, citizen input. Do we have any citizen input today?
I should go. So I'm at Brookins. I'm in the Putman room, which is one of the normal meeting rooms. So for full compliance with the emergency revisions of Open Meetings Act, I'm going to go check to see if anyone's here to give public input.
Okay. And anybody on Zoom doing probably wanting to do public input?
Yeah. This is Marlon Mitchell. I'd like to give some public input when it's time.
Yeah, you. I think first followers, we have you on the agenda, so we'll get a chance to get to that. This is just for a general public input, but we have you on the agenda.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
No, so there's no one here.
Okay. So I've been first followers was trying to say something. As I said, they're in on the agenda for later on.
Great. There's no one in the physical building to give public input, so we're
great.
Good.
Great. That's so an approval of agenda.
Oh, I'm going to show it on the screen.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. And I was looking at it a while ago, so there we go. Here's the agenda.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're good then.
We have to do a roll call.
Roll call.
Oh, we have to do a roll call.
Yeah, I have to do a roll call. Let's see. Elaine Plencia?
Aye.
Kyle didn't join us, did he?
Okay. He will later.
Julian Rappaport?
Here. I mean, yes.
Jane Sprandl?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie.
Yes. Okay. So moving on, my comments are I'm glad we're here, and I'm glad that Leon is joining us as the assistant. I would like, instead of making my comments, would you be willing to introduce yourself to the people, members of the board and the community that do not know you right now? And just go from there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. It's been a long journey to get to this point. I'm Leon Bryson, and I'm originally born and raised here, or basically from Chicago, but spent most of my life here. So this is what I know, Champaign, Urbana. I started my work as a mental health tech, working in a group home setting for a couple of years. That prompted me to, my supervisor at the time prompted me to consider taking on a position as a research assistant for the University of Chicago. So I did that for 3.5 years, working with NAMI, and the study was based on self-help with groups such as NAMI. And so I did that, and that was really mind-blowing, mind-changing, just understanding that some of the trials and tribulations that they were going through at that time. From there, I worked at the Pavilion as a milieu coordinator. So worked on a psychiatric unit with about 25 adolescents for about 4.5 years. Did that for a while. And that, again, that experience opened my eyes to the need to provide quality services. So from there, I went to, let's see, I'm trying to recount where all did I been. So, the Prairie Center. So I was at the Prairie Center for approximately 10 years. Most of those years I was, I started out as a youth substance abuse drug counselor. So did that for about a year. I was sought out by the creator, founder of an evidence-based program called Parenting with Love and Limits. Did that for about 10 years. And very fascinating work, very hard work, taking over 600 plus families through a counseling program, which lasted 2 to 3 months. So that was a very intense job. Did that for, 10 years. From there, spent about 2.5 years as a director over there at the Don Moya Boys and Girls Club. And so had a chance to work with Sam Banks and Charles Burton over there. And that led me to where I am today. So that's just kind of going in a chronological order, being pretty quick about it. But I know a lot of people here in Champaign, know many of the agencies, and several of you on this call. So I am delighted to be a part of an esteemed panel of smart, intelligent individuals, and hope to learn a lot from you all. So that's me in a short stick.
Thanks, Leon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome. Okay, Lynn, Executive Director's comments.
Well, that was great. I guess my comments are, thank you, Leon.
Okay.
This is Leon's second day.
It's his second day.
Second day.
So I'm really trying not to overwhelm him. I did yesterday introduce him to about a dozen too many people, but then we saw some of them again today. So going.
Oh, he has to remember all our names and be able to tell us who we are.
I think I can do that. That's not a problem.
But like getting out of Hawkins is a little bit more of an issue. Like,
yes.
Figuring out where you are is always hard here. So anyway, it's been a great couple of days. We are, I think I should keep my comments brief because we're really at the, we're at the beginning to middle of the application review. So staff have been working on those program summaries and we'll talk about it a little bit later. It takes a lot of focus. So we're really like in it, and it's a great time if you are reviewing an application and you want to talk to us about anything that you see, we're thinking about it too. So that's been the main, there's always something going on, but that's like really the most important part of our business. It's also interesting to watch federal and state legislation right now, but nothing's finished yet. So there's nothing to announce or celebrate, just I'm watching, and I'll probably be able to give you a full report of the legislative and policy conferences, which are going on right now in the April board packet. They've been stretched out over 5 weeks instead of 1 week. So it's I'll be able to, I think, wrap them up by the time the April board packet comes. So anyway.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. It looks like we have a lot of business to do today, so. Starting with the election of officers and so nominations and election.
I would like to nominate Joe as president.
Second.
Okay, thank you. So we have to vote, yes. So Stephanie? Do we have to vote?
Do we have to close the nominations first?
Okay.
Okay. I think you have to ask if there are any more nominations.
Okay. Yeah.
If not, then we can vote.
Are there any other nominations?
No. You've done such a good job, no. Joe. We are thrilled you'll do year two. Okay.
Thank you very much. That was a very emphatic no. I said, okay, am I in trouble or something? Okay, thank you. Okay,
okay, you ready for the vote?
Yes, we'll go ahead then.
Okay, Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandl?
Yes.
Jean-Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes. So, thank you. So now, nominations for vice.
I just have a question. Is Kyle going to be able to be at meetings? That's my one worry.
I just talked to Kyle. Really, we had quite a long conversation. He has been unable to make the meetings because of one of the county board meetings occurs at the same time. And he has asked a few times if they could change the time of that one. Tonight, he's going to go to it because they have you may have seen in the newspaper, they have a really big issue that he can't fail to discuss with them. And then he's gonna come here, he'll be an hour late. But the most important thing is he can't run for vice president again anyway, because he's already done 2 years.
No.
So, but there might be someone else interested.
Okay, so I guess I will ask, John, would you be interested? Hector Joachim.
I would be happy to serve as vice president under the leadership of Joe. He's done a great job, so I'm happy to help out in any way I can.
Thank
you. Fabulous.
Thank you, John. So
I would throw John's name in the pool as vice president.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we have to say, any other nominations out there? Okay. Stephanie, roll call, please.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandl?
Yes.
Jean-Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes. Thank you. So...
the full officers, yay!
So we got that done. Thanks, John. I'll be glad to work with you. Thank you very much. So as we're moving on here, the bylaws, and because of all this, where we are right now, we're all in our homes or different places, the bylaws sometimes are not as, don't seem as connected to what we're doing. And I don't know if we're going to be able to finish it all today, but is there a conversation to be had about it? I know I hear that Elaine had some questions.
Well, we've talked quite a bit about it. I do want to, the bylaws appear, I'll share the screen. I want to apologize to you all. It is my fault that you did not have elections in January. This is because I was waiting for appointments from the county board. So there are a couple things in the bylaws that Elaine and I have already talked about. And as I go through it, I think there are they're like little places for improvement. We can't go beyond what the state statute says. So essentially this document quotes the statute and you don't go beyond the authorities that you're given under the statute. But there are a couple things that like we could add a provision that says that, because here it says members shall be appointed by the chairperson of the county board. And this is what the statute says. And a court has interpreted that as meaning the county executive. So we could change the wording, or we could leave it with some kind of provision that says nothing in these bylaws can supersede county, state, and local regulations. There are other aspects of the bylaws which you might be interested in. You could add an officer, you could change the rule about having a January meeting. So here, this is the section. It's my fault that you didn't have elections until March. But because of the circumstances, you know, maybe by statute, you have to have elections by July. So you have a lot of time. So you could change the bylaws to say something like elections will take place after board members are seated, you know, or appointed, something like that. So there's a lot of room for improvement in here anyway. The most interesting part is the remote participation, which is exactly out, the language here is exactly from the Open Meetings Act. So you can't have, where did it go? I've lost
up,
it.
Up, it's like, no, you're going the wrong
way. Down, down.
You're going the wrong way.
Here it is, remote
participation.
So this is exactly what the Open Meetings Act says. And right now, it doesn't apply because we're under an emergency declaration and an executive order from the governor to there are special provisions for having these meetings. So something like this, you know, like, I don't know if you can change it because this is what the law says. So, but maybe a provision could be added that, you know, something like under an emergency, you know, we would. So anyway, I think this is, it's always good to review the documents. This hasn't been touched since 2017. So I could bring you back a draft of revised bylaws in April or whenever. And if you're interested in that, and if you have ideas about things that could be better, you know, shoot me a note and we'll see what we come up with. Is that okay?
It works.
Sure.
And the laws might change. Right.
One suggestion, if you're going to have us review this with an eye toward changing things, you probably should cue us as to what we can't change.
Right.
So
highlighted some way.
In some way, let us know what's changeable and what's not changeable.
Well, you know, because the house is not on fire for us to get this done really fast, I could just bring you a draft that, you know, at the next meeting, and you can look at it and react to that. And I can,
I mean, in the event that we have ideas that we'd like to change, it would be useless to change them, to suggest them, if it's something that can't be changed. That's all.
Well, you have the statute. There's the statute, there's county ordinances, there's the Open Meetings Act. And these are all the framework in which the bylaws have to be contained.
But you already know the answer, right? To what we can't change, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the rest of the staff and I together could figure it out. It depends on like how clear I am on the rules of the Open Meetings Act. Because if anything changes in that statute, we're gonna hear about it. We're gonna know all about it. Mm-hmm. But the Open Meetings Act could be revised and I might not realize that.
Yeah, my concern was that the parts that no longer describe what is the case, you know, I wasn't interested in shifting power or taking power away, but I was in another organization that had to, you know, from the national office down, do something about the Zoom meetings in the bylaws and mention in case of emergency, you know, it's remote meetings may be held, because I have seen odd little times when some citizen or somebody will protest on the basis of the letter of the law, you know, well, your meetings are not valid because you didn't do X. And so that was how Lynn and I started our conversation.
That's a justice solution, which is just simply to put in a provision like that, like meetings will be held in full compliance with Open Meetings Act.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing you could add is like, except in cases of emergencies, such as, but not limited to, infection prevention, such as pandemics, epidemics, you know, obstacles to transportation, such as like if there's like weather changes, like if there's the roads are blocked with snow or something like that. This way we could then do tele meetings instead of having to like reschedule if for some reason there's a deadline on something that we need to discuss. But Yeah, I don't know. I'm open to suggestions from the board. The only other thing I was thinking was for the membership part, we could always add a provision if in the like a time constraint for the chairperson to make a decision for an appointment. For if some, for some reason there's a dispute between the chairperson and the county board between who they want to appoint, after like say 30 days if the chairperson fails to appoint someone just because of whatever issues the two groups are having, then a two-thirds majority of the county board could appoint and a member to the mental health board if for some reason there's some kind of issue. This way, for the two-thirds majority would hopefully be a bipartisan nomination and appointment to the mental health board and prevent delaying of the seating of mental health board members. But again, just thoughts that I had.
So I think that, so in that case, I don't think we have authority to do that, but I think in the statute, the statute, the Community Mental Health Act does say that those members need to be appointed during a certain time frame. So you could bring a complaint to the county about what, about how slowly the appointments are taken. That, I think you have the right to do that right now. I don't, and so something like that could be included, but I don't think you can tell them what to do.
So we can launch a complaint about it because I mean, we're down two members right now and we've been down quite a while.
Right. And then the Open Meetings Act is about 25 pages and I just printed it because it does appear to have some provisions related to certain types of disasters. So we could just include that in a board packet at some point too, so that everyone can see it. Because I do think it's got, there is a lot of language in there for special situations.
Okay. Thanks, John. So nothing needs to be done right now, so we can move on. So we're bylaws, annual reports. On pages 844.
So we have a very special request.
Okay.
Today. I'm going to request that when you make a motion and second and have discussion of this document, that you defer until, is deferring the right thing, Stephanie, or is it tabling? And Chris Wilson is going to explain why we're asking that.
Yeah.
I'm,
is Chris here?
He is here. I'm happy that I get to present this to you in March when okay. You might have some free attention to look at it, because you can all react to it. And if you, mm-hmm. you want us to change things in it, we have time. Chris is going to explain. I'll just give you some context. The only mm-hmm. thing that you're required to approve by statute is the financial report. And it has to be approved within 90 days of the end of the fiscal year. But so this board meeting would be the right time to do that. And Chris is going to explain what happened. So there's, you know, all this other nice stuff, but there's a
really- Well, then I have a question, which is, I mean, why not just wait until you get all the accurate information and present it again and-
That's what I'm going to do.
Okay, so they don't need to go through a motion or anything like that.
This they can just skip.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so-
they can just-
So Chris is going to explain what happened, but I just want to show you like the content. There's a lot of content here. And so there's Joe's letter. And then there are these great financial reports that Chris prepared for us. And then there are service activity reports. So if there are things in here that you would like us to do differently, we have time, because we'll bring this back hopefully in April. And I'll let Chris explain what happened.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Sure. Well, essentially, the financial reports are no longer accurate at the time they were prepared. It's based on the information that I had available to me. As the auditor's office continues the process to close out the books on year 2020, they continue to make adjustments and billings and things. And so the numbers have changed since the time that report was created.
Okay.
So as soon as we can give you revised financial reports, we'll bring this back to you for approval. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sorry that it's in the board packet.
Okay.
Are we going to say anything about the content? Because I have one question, or is that for, is that now? just one thing.
Yeah, just one thing. Go ahead.
There are two in the program, you know, summaries or whatever you're going to call them. There are two programs for Cunningham, one on page 21 and one on page 29. And they have such similar language that they sound like the same program. And that really confused me. The parenting model planning and implementation and, wait a minute, is it? I'm saying the wrong thing. It's 28.
That looks like an error.
Yeah, so, that's what I was thinking.
Thank you. Because I
You're welcome.
Before, and we didn't catch it before. So the one on page 28 is right.
Okay.
But the one on page 21 is not. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I thought, my goodness, it sounds like the very same program.
Oh, Elaine. Thank you.
Thank you.
I did a lot of proofreading on my book this year, so.
So it just comes with the territory,
yeah? Yeah.
Yep, that's just a flat out copy and paste mistake.
Okay.
Okay. So we have the information that we need for this, and then let's just move to the next thing, which is the review of needs.
Oh, I'll share the screen. This is a project from, I'm not sharing the right screen, sorry. This is a project of, what in the heck? What do you all see? My entire screen?
Yeah, just keep going.
I'm so sorry. I have a lot to learn about computers, but
we all do.
This is, I'm sorry for scrolling too. This project was taken on in the fall, and it was actually completed in November, and the professor thought she sent me this report, but it was stuck in her draft, you know, meant to be sent. So we got it in January, and I love what they did. I think it's a fantastic document. It's really not, you know, relevant to anything you're doing today, but we thought it might be nice, you know, with the annual report. It's a look back. It's a look back to before 2020. It's a look back before COVID, and there are they did some needs assessment work where they looked at other survey documents, other assessment documents, and then they used almost 10 years of the data that have been collected from agencies that you have funded. So it's not a picture of the entire mental health system, just the one you've funded. So that, like, this is all the background stuff, but here we get into their analysis of data, and it's kind of nice. And there are some things that happen that don't make sense. Like, there's a period of time where all of a sudden it doesn't look like we're funding anything for youth and families, but that's because it was being funded by Access Initiative instead of by the Mental Health Board for a couple of years, and then it comes back. So anyway, if you have any questions or any interest in this document, I just thought it would be really nice to share with you, you know, before we start talking about the future. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I raise a question?
Yes, go Susan. Ahead, please.
Yeah, I was just really struck and concerned by page 49, the substantiated cases of child maltreatment. Mm-hmm. And that we were at almost 16% of children in the county, which really speaks to the need to continue to provide services to children. And I know that sometimes we're more focused on adult services, not that those aren't equally important, but it it suggests that there's trouble in River City to have such a high rate of substantiated cases.
So when you have a high rate of substantiated cases, there's also a higher rate
of unsubstantiated, yeah. of unreported.
Unreported, yeah. yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for catching that, because that was an item that I thought, you know, will probably make its way into our own needs assessment later this year, that kind of continues to have problem here.
I think the substantiated cases is 16 out of 1,000. I think they missed a zero on that.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's 1.6%.
Oh.
Yeah. Because they put a comma there and it should be.
Oh, thank you.
It looks too high. I mean, it's still
yes.
higher than the state average by 50%, but not as high as otherwise would be.
I will say that as a volunteer for CASA, the caseloads have just jumped with the COVID. It's really hard to keep up with all the requests for visits. So it is much higher right now than it was even in the past 10 years.
And we're seeing a lot higher
rate. John.
Yeah, John, thanks. And we're seeing a much higher rate for a lot of the reports that are coming in now also for abuse. And
then the most sign of neglect is no sign. So that's what people have to remember is you're not going to see physical signs on a person who's being neglected or abused most of the time. So it's really hard to catch unless you have a high suspicion.
And having to prove that is also quite difficult. Okay, thanks, good information. So we're now up to E, First Followers, and I know we have someone from First Followers here.
So there's a letter in the board packet. I'm showing it to the public because in case you all decide to take action, we just need to make sure everyone can see what it is, but it is in the board packet, which is available online. So I'm going to stop sharing now.
Okay. Okay, you ready to go ahead?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Joe. Good evening, everybody. My name is Marlon Mitchell. I'm the founder and executive director of First Father Reentry Program here in Champaign. First, I would like to thank Lynn for her empathy and the work that she has done to get us on this agenda tonight. And secondly, I would like to welcome aboard Leon, and I look forward to working with you, Leon, in the near future. So what brings me here tonight, unfortunately, is a failure on my agency's part of missing the deadline to submit a funding proposal for the fiscal year 2022. I'm very embarrassed, and I fully understand that the board has rules set forth for all agencies. But what I wanted to do is to just provide just a little context that speaks to the importance of the Mental Health Board's funding for First Followers. We first received funding back in 2016. We opened our doors. It was created in 2000. I founded it in 2015. So the second year that we were in existence, we received funding from the Mental Health Board in 2016. So we've been receiving that funding ever since. And then last year, we opened a transition house here in Champaign, and that was the first year that the Mental Health Board granted us funds to run a transitional house. And it's the first transitional house here in Champaign County, actually, for people returning from prison. So we were really proud of that. We've run that for a year now. It's been a year in December. And then another critical component that the Mental Health Board that you all fund is our drop-in center. Of course, with COVID, we've had to do things mostly online and remotely. So, you know, we made that change. But I just want to talk a little bit about my personal experience, because I think it will kind of highlight the issues that we've had that has surrounded this issue of mass incarceration for years, for a very long time now. Me, myself, I'm formerly incarcerated. I did 3.5 years in state penitentiary. And I just remember my personal experiences just returning back to the community after serving my time. I was a very young man at that time, but I can remember paroling home to one of my relatives' home, which was in foreclosure at the time. So I was really stressing about having housing. So 3 months into my return back to the community, I was left homeless. And so I was sleeping, you know, what we call couch surfing, on friends, relatives' couches until I got stable. I spent 4 months trying to figure out or trying to get employed, filled out a lot of applications. And I was turned down because of my criminal background. So finally something, a friend of mine got me hired on where he works. And then I worked that job for a couple of years. And then I got another job that was a better paying job. And I worked that for about 3 or 4 years. And then I went back to school, went to Parkland College, obtained a degree. And then from there, after I finished my degree, I got a job, some employment that was in line with what my degree was. And I was gainfully employed working for Kraft Foods for 17 years before I decided to step away and start First Followers on a leap of faith. But what my passion was to make sure that me, using my lived experiences, to create something that could be useful for not only for folks that are coming home from prison, but also the families that do not have the resources to support those that are returning from prison. So through my lived experiences, I made it a mission of mine to create something where that I could stand in, or my organization could stand in the gaps to help those individuals that are returning from incarceration. Because upwards leads to like 60% of individuals who have been incarcerated in 3 years return back to incarceration without these resources. So through my own lived experiences, this is something that I'm very passionate about. The agency has grown tremendously over the years. I now have about 8 or 9 volunteers, but the first 2, 3, 4 years, we didn't have any. There's only one staff, but we've been able to grow, and we have paid volunteers that we find underfunding so we can pay for these services so that we can, what I call peer mentoring. So we have grown quite a bit. And going back to our failure of meeting a deadline, I just want to bring some context to all of this, because it's very critical for us to continue the work that we're doing, because the money that we're getting from the mental health board, it takes up about a third of all our operation expenses. So I fully understand that, there's rules and regulations to all of this, but I just wanted to provide some context so that you all can really know the critical need that we have, not only in our community, but also the importance of the funding that it is that you all provide, so that we can provide a service that no one else in this county is providing. So with that, I guess my ask is for you all just to reconsider, or to consider that we can submit a proposal for this upcoming funding year. Although it's late, there wasn't much that we were gonna change in our funding proposal. So what we have written the prior year that rolled over the last couple of years is pretty much cookie cutter what we're going to do this year. It's just by oversight that we missed the funding deadline. So again, I thank you, Lynn, for allowing me to speak. I thank you, Joe, for chairing the board. And so that's it.
Okay, thank you. So I will just open it up to add any questions for the First Followers.
I think Julian has a question.
Yeah, okay. I didn't see him. Okay, Julian, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think that the Mental Health Board has appreciated the work you guys have been doing. I wouldn't mind hearing, how come you didn't just do it on time? I mean, was there a reason?
Well, I'm not the one to make excuses, so...
I want you to make an excuse. I have to have some reason that you did it, that you didn't do it, right?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things that was going on at the time. Of course, the pandemic we're not meeting in a centralized location right now. Everything's done remotely. So it's kind of like we're patching all these holes, and I have mentors and volunteers doing different things at different times. And we had some turnover with our administrative assistant. And so that was one of the things. But I think also, what had happened with the deadline was that I think it was last year where they kind of just rolled it over where we didn't have to submit another proposal. So it kind of got lost in the shuffle this year, thinking it was going to roll over, but we just didn't pay attention to the deadline. So it was just a lot of moving parts that were going on. And then by the time, I think it was due on a Friday, and we figured it out on Monday, that Monday morning. And so I sat and wrote an email to Lynn. And so, you know, then I decided just to, you know, write a letter, because one of the things that, you know, through my own lived experience, I know, I mean, it's a commitment that I've made a long time ago that I wanted to be able to stand in the gaps of all of this. But I feel really bad, because not only is a responsibility of mine, but it's a promise to my community to provide this service.
Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, last month you presented, or members of your group presented to our board about the transition home, and it was clear that you've taken the small amount of money that the board has provided and really leveraged it and created partnerships.
So, Susan, we're losing your voice. We can't hear you.
Very impressed with how you've leveraged funding from the board. We are still new in the process of doing two-year contracts. Although we don't like to make it a pattern of missing deadlines, and we've been very strict, I do understand how that could happen when you've gone from a two-year contract back to needing to reapply. And I don't want rules to unnecessarily impact programs that are doing exactly what we hoped programs would do, which is to expand and leverage funds in a way that meets the goal of the program and the mental health board. So I am inclined to make an exception if the rest of the board is willing to do so.
Okay. So any other comments or questions?
I had a couple of questions.
Go ahead, please.
I'm totally for this program, so don't take this the wrong way. But so at this time, it has not been submitted. Is that correct? That no application has been. Okay, so no application has been submitted. So this would be directed at the staff. Did we have anyone else who submitted an application after the deadline?
It's impossible to submit an application after the deadline.
Because it closes.
We are flexible on everything else. We let people, you know, slide for a long time with things like audits and require in the quarterly reports and the annual reports. But a few years ago, the board asked us to accept no more late applications. So that's your hard deadline, and we can't, like, when the system closes, it's done. For me to reopen the system is just a matter of like getting in there and changing a bunch of parameters. But for you to reopen an application cycle, I think, like, so because this was in the public notice, it's also in the priorities document, which is a public document, that there will be no late applications. I think you can't just accept a late application. You would actually have to create a notification of funding and give 21 days notice for when that opens. So for example, like, we could get a NOFA together and get it in the newspaper, maybe as early as Sunday. To open the system 21 days after that, it would also have to be posted on all the websites. And then the notice would say when it's open and when it's going to close again, and to have that be open to all the public, to anyone who wanted to submit a late application. That's what I would do to protect yourself from liability, because the deadline is a hard deadline. It says no late applications will be accepted. And it's been like that for several years, and it's in the public notice. So that,
and that was kind of my next question. Is there anywhere where we legally have to follow a rule, whether we set it ourselves or a state, you know, rule? And then if there wasn't anything concrete, are we setting ourselves up for in the future, someone saying, well, 2 years ago, you know? And again, I totally love the first ballers thing. So I'm not trying to dog on you in any way. We have to also, you know, follow the legal ramifications. And I just wanted to clarify if there were any on that. So thank you, Lynn.
This is in the category of rules that you can create and you can change. You can. And so you can also amend them and say, we're going to let them submit an application during this 1 week. And my impression from James and Marlon is that they could do it in 1 week.
Yes,
like they sounds know like what it. They want to do. But there may be other agencies that were not able to complete the application because they ran out of time. And so they need, like, to protect yourself from liability, you should afford that opportunity to everyone.
Everyone.
Okay. Just now, like, then consider in the future taking that rule out and saying, we will accept late applications. If you do accept late applications, it creates a little bit of a challenge for us as staff. But but this is, Jane, in the realm of things that you all get to decide. So,
so to summarize, and we are looking at if we open it, it's a distinct amount of time. It has to be publicly put out in the public, in the newspaper, 21 days. So we're looking at something like April till April 14th or something like that. And that would be the hard deadline. And this would be a one-time thing. And it's open to everyone who hasn't turned in an application. And it could be just first followers, or there could be 10 other organizations.
So I think that you did capture what I was thinking. You all can accept a late submission. You have the authority to do that. I'm just suggesting that if you do that, then that could lead to someone else wanting to submit a late application. And if you don't say yes to them, then there is grounds to sue you.
Well, and that would be my concern, because wasn't it NAMI? They had just gotten like a brand new director that week or something when it was due. So, okay.
If we make this move in this direction,
okay,
could we limit the opening of applications to any program that we're already funding, so that we don't completely open it up to anything from out of the blue now?
Okay.
It seems a lot safer to me if that's legitimate.
I'm not sure. I didn't ask our attorneys that question.
Okay, that's a question to ask the attorneys.
So what you can do, and it looks like Stephanie is thinking about this too. So the rule about 21 days notice, that's law. That's not that's how you properly notice an opportunity for funding. And that's 21 days before the open date. The closing date could be the next day. And that could be a way of limiting the number of applications that you get.
Well, I would feel different about it personally, but anyway, unless it's illegal or in some way raises a problem, mm-hmm. if this were offered to a program, any program that we're already funding, because we obviously have an interest in not forcing a program that we like to shut down. Whereas that's very different than opening it up to start up a whole new thing.
True.
So I think there's a legitimate distinction there. So I would prefer, if it's possible, to limit it. You get what my point is.
Yeah.
So I could check with the attorney right now. I don't know that you can do, I think that might be tricky because of the way the priorities document and the, everything says no late applications will be considered. So there's no clause about except for the ones that we like, So I think we have to be careful about narrowing the who can apply, but I think we can narrow the time frame.
Okay.
Stephanie, does that sound? I mean, you're our other lawyer.
I'm not sure about that. I couldn't say for sure.
Well, I would like you to look into the fact of whether or not it would be legal to simply say that we're opening applications from any program that we've already been supporting.
I think it's strictly
that we're currently supporting.
You can sort of do whatever you want. I think the concern is not whether it's legal, but what it sets you up for next. If an organization that you aren't currently funding was trying to make an application and they ran out of time and they don't get to take advantage of this opportunity, they might also have grounds.
For what?
To you.
What grounds would they have for what? I mean,
judicial treatment.
If there's no, well, that's what I'm trying to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a legitimate distinction between programs that were already funding with respect to the filing of an application that was late for, let's assume we know them already. We know that there's a trivial reason why they didn't make the date. That's very different than if it's a whole brand new program that just comes in out of the blue. It seems to me we could make that distinction. If we can't, then let's not. But let's just try to make this as narrow. I'm going to make this as narrow as possible. That's all.
And I understand where you're coming from, Julian, with that, because I think it is important that we don't just open it up to everybody. And we narrow the window by time or by, but that it's about legality. How do we make sure that it doesn't come back on us? I mean, I was part of an agency that ended up closing because we didn't get our papers in on time also. And I look back on it and it still hurts me.
But I will ultimately accede to whatever the staff finds most workable.
Yeah, okay.
Well, what the staff finds most workable is a whole different issue.
Don't open that one up.
It's a different question. I might come back to you in a couple months and say, we need two more full-time staff because we can't manage the processes that we already have. And to add another application cycle on top of this one, where we're like within all everybody else's deadlines, you know, and no one can take time off. It's very hard. So that's a whole different conversation. What it costs the staff to do extra, but I'll check with the attorney.
Okay, check with the attorney. And also, I mean, right. If there is county funding for another staff or two, I mean, is that something we can look into it?
I don't know. Yeah, I think
we don't know, but we just throwing it out there.
I think the county's about to get $41 million from the
U.S.
Treasury, and that they have a whole lot of discretion with.
Well,
they want to do some social service programming, so there could be opportunities, but I don't think there's anything right now. Mm-hmm. So let me check and thank you, Julian, for the question, and I'll find out what are the limits that we can put on this without creating trouble for you down the line. And the staff thing is a different issue. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that in the time, but it's just something that we all can start thinking about because it's, mm-hmm. I see you guys as being overworked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The rules are also partly so that we can continue to have a really narrow administrative margin. You know, that's how we've been able to stay, never adding staff for years and years and years while adding business. But, you know, so the rules are sort of the container. And if that's not a good thing for our community anymore, we should change that.
Okay. Yeah. A conversation to be had at some point.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Marlon
or Susan.
First followers? Questions? Elaine?
Just a question of process. Because as Susan said, we are new at this 2-year application business. Do you rely on agencies to just see a public notice of it's time to apply? Or for those applications, is there a specific heads up? Like your 2 years are coming to an end.
Very specific. The contracts tell you how much time
I know what the contracts tell, but I mean, is there any notification process? Because I can see this happening again.
We have a monthly meeting of the agencies that are funded, and we discuss at every month, we discuss things like that. Like we don't call people and say, hey, you have a 2-year contract, you need to reapply. I think that it's sometimes there are things that you have to like take responsibility for.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I just wondered what your process was, if it was different for those agencies or not, because it's also new for them, you know, because it's new for us. Okay, just wondered.
So this is maybe a really good reason to be careful with that 2-year contracting process. I think you all expressed concerns about it before we tried it. And this might be one of the things we, you know, that a good reason to be careful with it and not do it.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah. Can I speak? This is good, Susan. I really like the 2-year contract process in terms of the way in which it reduces work on both the agency and on the board and staff. So I wouldn't want to set it aside because there was a failure to meet the deadline. But if the county is receiving additional funds because of the Recovery Act or whatever it's called, are there alternative flexible funds that could be tapped to support first followers outside of our funding process for a year so that we don't have to make changes in our rules? And I just, I don't expect an answer to that right now, but I don't want us to be so rigid that we place a successful project that is showing important increases in expansion in jeopardy. And so looking at alternative sources of funding would be a way to work around our rules. And I remember why we put in the rules of no late proposals, because we had a few agencies that were chronic.
Well, I would just in defense of the staff, I would like to say that rigid is the least accurate description of what we're doing. Like, we are flexible with everything. Everything can be late except this. We have audits that we are almost 6 months late with, and we're still, you know, we're not cutting off contracts. We are as flexible as we're able to be because we appreciate the values of the board. So I'm just saying, if we need to find more flexibility, there we may need to look deeper to really create that. The small organizations tend to need a lot of technical support. Yeah. Every day there are conversations. We are a little bit stymied about how to help people with their bookkeeping needs. We can't, it creates a conflict of interest for us to do the accounting. So, you know, can we hire somebody to do it for the agencies so that they don't fall apart? Because the work they're doing is so important to us. There are also lots of funding opportunities right now, and a whole lot of our local agencies are either not taking advantage of the opportunities or they're being denied state funding for things that they're uniquely qualified to do. So is there some kind of grant writer that we need to put on contract to help people? Like, we are, I think that we are so far from rigid.
And I think part of a conversation we had earlier was talking about how we could have a possibility of having some part-time people who could come in and help those individual agencies that are having difficulty with bookkeeping, having difficulty with grant writing, having difficulty, because I think one of the things that with small agencies, there's these boutique agencies that do great work. We've got to give more opportunities to survive because they are the ones that really work within the community with the folks that don't, can seem to access the help that they need. So yes, if there is funding out there in a way to get maybe not full-time employees with the board itself, but people who can go out to these agencies to facilitate some of the things that they're struggling with and getting in on time. I know, Julian, you had your hand up.
Yeah, let's see. I don't think that what we wanted, every single thing we're talking about is important for us to think through, and especially to try to be supportive and work with the staff to address whatever issues emerge. So I'm taking this incident at the moment as an instance that we could learn from. I mean, I think there are always unanticipated things that we learn from the way we're doing things from one moment to the next, because we're a live organization. We're not rigid, and there's lots, I mean, rigid in the sense of an everlasting structure here, outside of pretty broad boundaries that we set ourselves. So what I think we need to do, though, at the moment, is try to be as helpful as we can to this organization. I believe the sense of the board, unless I'm hearing something else from other board members, is that we'd like to be helpful to this organization and get it past this difficulty. At the same time, we have to be concerned about not creating more difficulties, yes, not just for them, but for lots of people, and including our staff. So with that intention in mind, I don't know how to proceed other than to say, which is what I was intending to say to Lynn before when I said, well, do what's workable for the staff. I don't know what else to say except figure out the easiest way to solve this specific problem, not something bigger than this, not all time, just now, this one. And if there's a workable solution, I believe that the board would support it. If there's not a workable solution, then we can't.
Well, I have an answer from the attorney to this specific issue.
Already?
It is, I do not think it should be reopened to only agencies being currently funded. If you have an agency that did not make the deadline, you might be inviting a lawsuit. Reopen for a short time for anyone, as long as reasonable. The board still has discretion about what to fund and what they don't feel has sufficient money.
Okay.
So we could end up with, 10 applications, 9 of which you're not interested in, and that is absolutely your discretion. I think that's what they're trying to say. So is that helpful?
Far be it from me to argue with a lawyer.
Okay. Well,
so do we need a motion, Joe?
Yes, I think we do need a motion. And do you want to?
I'm going to attempt to make a motion.
Go ahead.
I'd like to say that John's had his hand up for a while.
John. Oh, sorry, John. Go ahead.
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
If we do open up the applications again, is that going to set us back in funding the other agencies for the next fiscal year?
So I think we will work on doing this without as much disruption. So obviously, like, we're right in the middle of reviewing applications. We have twice as many to review as we did last year, and I'm doing all of them with help from the rest of the team. This is Leon's second day. So what we have right now is a pretty daunting set of applications already. We also are experiencing the pandemic. I don't know if people realize that. So I do not want to ask the team to take on anything else right now, but we could get, this can't be closed until mid to late April anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, the earliest that late applications could be submitted is the other side of April, after you've already been presented with the program summaries we're working on now. So we just do, we just like pick up there and see what happens.
Okay.
Right now, I don't even know exactly how much money you will have to spend on agency contracts. So, we're just like right in the middle of working through some of these issues anyway. So I think we just, like you said, Julian, just do the next right thing, and then we'll see what happens next and what the right thing we have to do after that is. We might not be able to issue contracts as of July 1st. This may delay the issuing of contracts, but we have a budget shortfall, so maybe that'll help us. But this is all, as we go, we're figuring it out.
I mean, from my perspective, I'm, obviously, I think with the rest of the board, in that we want to fund First Followers in this transition home because of the vital impact that it has on recidivism in our community, and, not having another program like it in our community. And so I'm not worried about a lot of other programs applying that haven't already. I feel like the window is small. And so in our area, again, the biggest thing is that it's going to be more work for the staff, which I feel for. That's, for us, when we look at these, we will probably look back into the, and there were say like 10 other applications, we'll be like, well, these were also ones that applied late. And then we can make decisions based on our best judgment on deciding how to prioritize funding when we determine funding for the agency. So, I mean, that's just my perspective, but my main thing is just making sure we're not delaying or hindering funding for groups that did apply on time so that they can still function. So if this is gonna delay the application or the funding process by several months, then obviously we wanna kind of consider that for the other agencies. But if it's not, then I'm totally fine with it.
So we could preserve the current process and just make sure that whatever else we're doing doesn't change that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So go ahead, Jane.
All right. So I make a motion that we open up the application process again. Sorry. For the 21 days or whatever is necessary by law for anyone to apply, and then we will go from there.
Need a second?
A second.
Okay. So go ahead and Stephanie, roll.
Was there any discussion on that motion that you
wanted? Any other discussion?
The 21 days is defined by law. Is that correct? Yes. Lynn, I'm asking.
Right. The notification of an opportunity for public funding has to be placed 21 days before the opportunity starts. We would that would be the start date of when people can apply, and then the end date would, I'm just suggesting a week.
Okay.
And if you think that's too generous, you could add to your motion or change it. But I think the time frame is the only thing that we can really, you know, play with.
Let's play with the window, make the window shorter.
So that should be added to Jane's motion, and it will remain open for 1 week, 7 days.
Or one week. 5 days, right?
Well, or is
it business days?
Business days?
You could. Usually, people work on these over the weekend too, so we don't make things.
You actually submit it on the weekend. Okay.
People work on them.
So 7 days.
So we're looking, 26, 28 days from now. Does that work with the staff to get these in, or do you want to have it open for 2 days?
It takes time. First, we have to write the notice of funding opportunity. Then we have to place it in the newspaper, and also on the websites. So all of those steps take time. Then whenever that notice is posted, it's 21 days later when the application system can be opened. So then that also is, there's some work that has to be done to do that.
Then we're looking at end of April.
So maybe, I can't. We're not ever in the office all together because of COVID. So it's a little tricky for me to estimate how long all this is going to take, but I hoped maybe Sunday. Stephanie, is that possible? If you had a...
It's Wednesday.
If I did,
if we had the notice finished tomorrow, maybe it could go in Sunday's paper. I'm not sure. All I could do is contact them and ask, but that's kind of short notice, but maybe.
So then it's 21 days from whenever that appearance is. The Sunday paper is preferred because it's got
it's a big one. And that Sunday is the 21st, so.
I can tell you we won't be able to put it in Monday's paper.
So I guess like April 12th, is that when?
Yeah, that's about it.
So that would be probably the very earliest possible open date. Mm-hmm. And then we'd close it.
Close to the 19th.
So that's like, we will be done with our program summaries that we're working on before that. You know, we'll deal with that other stuff later. Okay.
Okay. So, Leon, you ready? We've got stuff for you to do, man.
I'm hearing.
Welcome aboard, man. Welcome aboard.
Yes. You can't quit now, okay? Okay. So do we have to change the motion or restate? Okay. So now let's go ahead and vote.
Let's see. John Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Susan Fowler.
Yes.
Elaine Plencia.
Yes.
Julian Rappaport.
Yes.
Jane Sprandl.
Yes.
Joe Omosagie.
Yes. Okay. So application review process. So from what I gather, we're probably going to do it like we did last year. This is kind of small on my computer here. I can't see it. I need my glasses.
Can you all see it? It's looking really weird to me. Am I sharing the part that says, okay. Thank you. So I had, here's evidence of my waiting for new board members. I even assigned new board members applications to look at, but I don't think that anyone will be appointed before April. So these really don't have secondary reviewers.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you all want to discuss the process at all, or?
No.
No, it's too late.
No.
So is it okay if we kind of approach it the way we did last year?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay. Please.
That works.
I think this is just a bunch of cool acronyms for you.
Yes, all the acronyms. But
there's also the, okay. I'm gonna stop sharing, sorry.
The first year, so what are these acronyms? So, moving on. Agency information.
This is Patty Walters. I just really quickly wanted to introduce the new CFO at DSC. Josh Cornwell is on his first meeting. He just joined us 2 weeks ago. So he is also trial by fire with the CCDDB and CCMHB application process. But we're excited to have him, and he's new to the nonprofit world too. So he's a welcome addition to our team.
Okay. Is he here as a picture? Is he on?
He is.
Yes. I'm here. Hello.
Hey, Josh. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I worked at DSC a way long time ago, too.
Gotcha.
And believe it or not, I was here.
So that was back in the day when we were all kids.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome. Any other agency information to share? Okay. So moving back to old business, we got the SILA again. SILA facilities. On pages 68 to 71.
Before we do this, I want to, I will share the screen. This is follow-up to the ongoing conversation about what to do about the SILAs. this is a conversation that can go on forever and ever. And Julian just mentioned the time. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, like, this is sad. And there really doesn't appear to be a lot that we can do about it. Like, the obvious best thing is to raise the pay for the people. This is a national crisis. Yeah. At our national conference yesterday, we spent 2 hours talking about how all of the problems in the DD service system and all of the things we want to talk about in that particular system don't mean anything if we don't have an adequate workforce. And the only way to develop that workforce is to start paying them for what they do. They've been called angels and heroes for the last year, which is incredibly demeaning when it's followed up with no change at all in their status or pay. So that's the underlying issue. It underlies difficulty here with the unmet needs, with the inability to expand small group home capacity in this community. You know, these ideas at toward the bottom about like incentives for training in some ways really feel quite hollow because they're temporary short-term solutions. And really, like, the issue is we're asking people to do a really hard job. And if we don't follow that with a livable salary, these little incentive gift cards and badges don't really mean anything. So, you know, great way to wrap up the meeting on a rainy day, but it's by way of keeping you all informed. At least, you know, like so many things during COVID, at least this system problem caught the attention of a lot more people than used to be watching it. So maybe that will result in some change now that people really, more people see how flawed these systems are. Maybe things will change, I guess. I don't
know. Yep. That's the hope anyway. That's the hope.
Okay.
So any CCDB DD information?
Oh, do you want to see the contract amendment report?
Oh, sure. I was just skipping.
It's very brief. There's no decision for y'all. This is something that was, the board made very clear last year that we should be flexible when agencies were impacted by COVID. And when they, especially when they came up with a solution for that, and Macy has, you know, they have some ideas about how to shift what they're doing so they continue to help children in the Mahomet and Seymour areas. So I think that this is a nice example of people being creative and us trying to be flexible to support that.
Okay, thank you.
And then you have a tentative study session scheduled for next week, but we don't have any particular agenda for it. So if you want to keep it, we can, or we could cancel.
I go for cancel.
Second.
Thanks, Julian. That was very quick.
Okay.
Because April is going to be packed. So
yes, it is.
Let's get ready and give ourselves a break.
So so you were talking about DDB information.
Yeah.
Just basically they met this morning, had a roughly similar agenda. Their elections are in July, so they didn't do that part. They don't have an annual report, so they didn't do that part, but otherwise similar conversations.
Okay. So move to approval for this board minutes. Mm.
I move to approve the board minutes for the last two meetings.
I'll second.
Thank you.
Going to the public, sorry.
Okay. Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Elaine Plencia?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Jean-Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Joe Omosagye?
Yes. Do we have any staff reports?
Those are deferred during March and April so that we just focus on those program summaries.
Okay. Board to board reports.
I guess I could say one thing, because I went to a meeting of the group that's been doing, you know, with the police and the, I forget what we're called, but the police and the local agencies, and, you know, it's it meets every other month. And Joel Sanders, who had been chairing that meeting, and he's just retired and taken a job as a police chief somewhere else. And he had been behind and was doing a great job at getting movement toward the one door approach for police and human services. At any rate, without going into great detail, I'll just say that what I'm hearing is that again, just for information, maybe you already know it, our local police are interested in working with mental health people, but it looks like what's going to happen, or what they're leaning toward, is essentially some sort of co-responder approach rather than that much more comprehensive and ambitious plan that it looked like we were going to actually get rolling here. So I'm personally a little disappointed that there doesn't seem to be enough community support for such a thing. It would be good for not just for police, but for mental health, and especially for the people who we're supposed to be taking care of. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can talk about it now in any detailed way. It's just, I just report it that with regret, it looks to me like without some more serious movement on the part of somebody, it's going to go in a different way.
Okay.
That's it.
Thanks, Julian. Any other board to board comments or statements? Okay, it's you can see the expenditure list. And any board announcements?
We have to vote.
I know, we gotta tilt our heads.
No, I figured out how to do it earlier today. I felt so competent. There we go.
There we go.
Still not perfect. Oh my gosh. And it's
well, we all have it, so. You
know. Yeah, we have it.
We have to show the public what you're voting on.
Well, I'd love to see the public process that.
I hear you. Okay. So there are many, many pages of it too. So they have to process it moving.
On page 86, does it really cost like $677 for like one advertisement or $149 for another advertisement? Seems kind of expensive for the News Gazette.
Yep.
They are the only one in town, that's why.
Wow. All right. Just wanting to know.
So how much is it going to cost us for this new announcement?
Wait, this is 80. Well, that was, what page is it on? This one, this page 86?
Yeah. No, it went back up.
This page 86?
86 is DBA News Gazette. And then it says February 10th, 21, it says $677 for legal notices / advertising on 1/8. And then another one for on 1/31 is $149 for advertising.
Well, these were, one of these was a open position, a vacancy that, you know, that we recently filled with Mr. Bryson. And that I think we put it in the paper several days. Stephanie, is that why this is a high?
The $677.60, that was for the associate director position. I don't remember how many days it ran, but quite a few. The $149, I believe, is for the NOFA. And that ran 2 days.
It's just good to know for perspective how much things cost.
So the next NOFA is probably going to cost around $149.
Good to know. Thanks.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Are there other things in here?
I move to approve the expenditures.
Thank you.
My second.
Okay.
Don Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
James Brandel?
Yes.
Joe Omo Sagye?
Yes. Any board announcements? Okay, someone needs to move to adjourn.
I'll motion that we move to adjourn this meeting.
Second. Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of the evening. May, and since we're not meeting next week, let's make it a good one. Okay. Take care. Have a wonderful month.
Bye-bye. Night.
Night.
Night.